Ladies and gentlemen, let's go. Lifestyle, wellness, and damn good time. Level up. To the Holistic Life Podcast, presented by Say What Radio.
Welcome, 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 welcome to another episode of the Holistic Life Podcast. I'm Jenny.
I'm Jay.
And we are here in the Unfuckwithable series, and we are at a coffee shop, so you may hear some odd ends and noises. Basically, we are staying at a place on our Nomad trip that has no Wi-Fi, so we had to figure out where to come to record this. It all is going to work out perfect because we have an amazing guest. And we're super excited to bring him on. Just met him recently, actually, a good friend of mine that I know who I used to partner up with for the magazine I used to coordinate. She introduced him and we had a great chat just recently. We connected. I love what he's standing for and what he believes in. We're going to talk about a lot of really cool stuff today. So before we get into that, let me tell you a little bit about David. David Brower, actually, he lives in France and he is an American, but he moved to France and he's been there for many years. And what I love about him is he's the sensorial guy. So he's inspired by his own romantic personality. He inspires others globally to connect to each other in meaningful ways, to find useful joy in the everyday, create moments of romance daily, and find pleasure in the small details and nuances of life. To seek relentlessly to fuse pleasure with purpose, sometimes a tad mischievous too. He's also the author of a book called The Dance of the Love Caterpillars. It's a number one best-selling romantic love story between two caterpillars that is aimed at romantics of all ages. What I'm most excited about to welcome David on is to really tap into this idea of sensual living and pleasure and hearing more about his story. So without further ado, I'd love to welcome David to the chat, to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful introduction. Thanks, Jenny and Jay.
Of course, share a little bit more about yourself. Share a little bit more about your journey. You know, just speak from the heart about like what took you to France, what's led you to this part, you know, like where you're at right now today in life.
Yeah, big question there. and I say it because I've been here 30 years, so yeah. A lot of life there.
Wow. For sure.
The great thing is that I was heading on a path that was not mine. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, I was at UCLA studying political science and convinced myself that I was going to become a lawyer. Probably the only reason was because during political science class, you would have these open papers with questions that you could just answer and build a case for, right? And of course, we all know that politics is the most creative industry that there is. So, you know, it was really easy for me to kind of unload my creativity in that way. I mean, I grew up in a family in the movie and theatrical business on both the performance side and the business side. And so it was always a fusion of that. And probably my path was intended maybe to be in that direction. But it just, you know, I was a very self-conscious kid. I was really small kid. I was very athletic, but when I got to high school, I couldn't get onto any of the sports teams. And it was kind of the beginning of my realizing that I'm different. Mm-hmm. I'm unique. I'm probably not going to belong in certain circles or places. And my life is potentially going to be different. And that became so true afterwards. And so next thing I know, I'm trying to go to law school and study. I took two prep classes. Does
wow.
anyone take two prep classes?
Wow.
What was it, like Kaplan and this other one?
Oh my gosh.
It was so ridiculous. So, I mean, this sort of over-trying, over-killing, I wasn't smart enough, big enough, clever enough. Like, and just, I just hated, you know, multiple choice kind of exams and things. Just really, really hated that stuff. So anyhow, luckily I failed horribly. And I'm like jumping up and down in my bed. I remember this. I was like drinking whiskey or something after I got my result, jumping up on my bed, like crying. And it was kind of a really strange moment. And my dad had always talked to me about Paris.
Uh-huh.
And he tried to make movies here in the 70s.
Wow.
And, you know, it was kind of like the ultimate opportunity to say, hey, you know, maybe I should take a break. And what I told everyone was, you know, I'm going to Paris, and I'm coming back for law school in a year. which was such bullocks. I mean, I wasn't coming back at all. And so, one-way ticket. I was 22, wow. got on a plane, basically knew nobody here. Spoke only a little bit the language. And, you know, just realized that everything that had made me feel like such an outsider was going to serve me really well here to make that actually a strength, you know, to be the only American of the group, to be the only one who doesn't really speak French at the table, to be in an international group of people where you're the only American also, I mean, you know, and just kind of started to find my way that way. So that was sort of the first big, really leap of my life. And I mean, such a big leap that I never moved back to the United States. And that literally has been 30 years now. And I still speak English.
So did you know when you bought that one-way ticket, you were going to France to stay? Or did it just kind of happen? Were you just like, I'm going to, for lack of a better phrase, find myself, and then if I come back to the States, I come back to the States? Or did you like get the ticket and was like, yo, this is probably where I'm going to end up?
Certainly at the time, I wasn't using language like, you know, I'll find myself and this, that, and the other. I do believe I've had for a really long time in my life kind of a fear of, you know, this so-called self-actualization. Mm-hmm. You know, am I, especially as I was heading up the wrong tree by heading towards law school. So when I bought the ticket, it was almost like I was getting an escape ticket. Mm-hmm. I was fleeing. Because I didn't know what else to do.
Wow.
And everyone's racing along and talking about the next steps in their life. And, you know, they all say it as if they've made the greatest decision of their life.
Right.
And, you know, oh my God, how many unhappy lawyers do I know? I love them. I love them. I have many of them. So they're very useful. But no, I mean, to spend a whole life in conflict like that, yeah. And they're saving people and stuff is nice. But so, no, I had, you know, Jay, I had no idea, you know. I thought literally I would be coming back in 14 months, but how can you see that far ahead when you've never even been to a place? Right. It's like you're getting on a spaceship, going to a foreign land. And of course, I came to Paris, France, and romance and love came. And, you know, life is life and life is loving.
Yeah, speak a little bit about that romance and love. I mean, going from, you know, that legal, the lawyer, you know, and then like really, I just feel like setting your life free in this journey into France, into the land of love and romance. Yeah. And that's a lot about what you talk about. So I want to hear more about how romance and pleasure and really talk to us about what sensorial living is.
Yeah. Well, when I got here, was also in some ways a rebirth of my connection to like women or meeting women, because I'd had a pretty uninspiring time in high school.
Yeah.
Like I literally didn't really have any significant kind of love interest thing. And I was a very small kid and had a lot of shame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was pretty handsome, you know, kid, charming, all this. But inside I really didn't feel that worthy and that confident.
Right.
And so when I came here, I mean, you know, again, suddenly I was this, like, just by default, I was original.
Right.
Just by default, I was.
You were the guy.
You know.
Yeah.
I was the guy. And like 30 years ago, like the American guy, you know, it was like, you know, I didn't really have to say too much.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was kind of a reopening for me to let's say, a beginning of reconnecting with that side of me. And I started to realize here how sensuous the life was around food, eating, cooking, drinking, you know, all the experience around tables in cafes and, you know, at the food markets and the unbelievable level of excellence and honoring and ritualizing and tradition. And, you know, it's like, I was kind of blown away already right from the beginning, saying, my gosh, how can they give so much attention to all of this? I mean, what's the point really? But then you start eating and they start talking about it. And like the whole experience starts to, like the environment starts to bring you into this very sensory experience. And you suddenly realize that there's a culture around, like, do you know how to eat? Do you know how to talk about what you're eating and what you're experiencing? Can you express that you don't like this thing, but what specifically is it and why? You know, and then suddenly, like, you suddenly realize that there's a lot of expression going on here. And it's not just sort of positive expression. There's a lot of, you know, ranting and complaining and, you know, this kind of stuff. The French are kind of famous for that. But overall, it's like you learn to actually start to really notice, observe with your senses way more what's going on around you. Because otherwise, it's like everyone else is having this experience and you're not. It's like having a dinner with people who are eating steak and, you know, you're eating tofu.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I don't want that experience. I want to be part of the experience. So also I surrounded myself mostly with only French people or mixed couples with French people to just fully immerse myself. And so this suddenly I'm getting invited on weekends and suddenly I'm getting invited on vacation with people to their summer house on the ocean side. And suddenly we're Sunday lunches. And again, it's like this building kind of experience of what it's actually like to savor these moments of life, including the insane amount of holiday that you get here, you know, at least as a salaried and employee here, the amount of weeks and how important that is, right? How people fight in their own companies to be able to go on holiday together. You know, it's they plan all year for this kind of thing. I just started to open to that.
That's amazing. I want to know, because I haven't been anywhere besides the United States. Here in the U.S., it feels like everything is so hustle, 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 go, 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 go. And like you just said, and Jenny's talked a lot about this, because when she was in corporate America, her big thing was like taking time off so you don't get burnt out. And the amount of time that companies don't give you, and, you know, the thing that if they did, you would be a better employee, instead of them trying to incentivize you with work hard, climb up the corporate ladder, blah, 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 blah. So was there like a culture shift too in that, from like even being a U.S. student to, like you said, going over to a place like France, where even the conversations about the food is different and the experiences are totally different?
Yeah, it's kind of night and day in a lot of ways. You know, this said, I mean, even though, like, I don't know how many movies make jokes about, like, the French never work, you know, France is the fifth economy in the world or sixth. I mean, yeah, things are kind of working okay here. And, you know, there's just a strong preference to using that time to resource yourself, right? To rejuvenate yourself, to have a moment that's really lovely. And what's great is the moments are so infused with pleasure and sensuousness, and the food's so amazing that you're so engulfed in it all, that it really takes you out of your head. It takes you out of your thinking. It takes you into something that's very visceral, very embodied. I mean, I like to say that there's really only two things that I know of that work all of your five senses, and that's, you know, sex, love making, and cooking.
Ah, right? Okay.
Cooking uses all of your eating, not entirely, but cooking. Oh my God, yes. You know, crazy, crazy, crazy. So yeah, I've always believed that life is not just about work, first of all. And if that's true, how do you actually build your life, organize your life, prioritize your life? How do you pick a profession, and how do you pick a company, and how do you negotiate your time off, and, you know, all these different kinds of things that can happen. I mean, it's shocking to me that Americans are not fighting like crazy to get holiday into law. Like, there is no law about holiday, right?
Right.
I mean, this is like, you know. And so the sort of work ethic, which America doesn't have a monopoly on, but it's definitely there. And I just also feel that there's been an overemphasis on, like, life purpose through work.
Right. Yes. You know? Yes.
Not that that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm all for, let's do something meaningful. Let's, you know, but let's not so overly identify that our obsession becomes our impulsion, it becomes our, like, we just can't leave it, right?
Right.
You know, you're just, and I've been there also. I've had a lot of that. But I use so much cooking because I cook like crazy, you know, and eating, that eating moment as sort of my meditation.
Right.
Because I want real life to be the meditation.
Right.
I do meditate in the morning, but, you know, I'm saying, you know, like some people use running.
Right.
Like some people use sex. Like some people use, you know, whatever. You could be cleaning up your house, ironing, washing the dishes, right?
I totally
you could be working out. There's just so many ways. It's really just a mindset of how you do that. And for me, that's how we access living a life that's more full of pleasure throughout the day than if we just get caught up on this sort of performance for performance sake.
Hmm.
And we drink the Kool-Aid, and at some point it becomes an addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even for people who are like relatively successful or very successful, they can't seem to like kind of let go, right? Like they've, you know, their soul has been caught up in that. And on top of it, I feel that you so undervalue, underappreciate, and give less attention to, you know, yourself, your health, your well-being, your intimate relationships, friendships, any kinds of activities you want to learn, hobbies and things, that you're really getting only a small piece of what's so extraordinary to be living for, including travel. I mean, my gosh, travel. You guys are traveling.
Yeah.
Traveling's like the greatest teacher ever.
It definitely opens up your eyes to a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember when I was first here, in the first 3 months, I went and I don't know if I told you this story, Jenny. I went to a dance place down in Spain. I'd been with friends and I was 23, and we traveled around for a few months. And then I went off on my alone, and I found myself in this old village. And so I go out at night to go dancing, and I'm in a, you know, a nightclub, and for like 3 hours straight, all they play is Spanish music.
Uh-huh.
And all, you know, everyone is singing like all the songs to the words. And like, you suddenly realize like, wait, there's other universes out there, right? Other cultures out there. Wow, there's other ways of living. Oh my God, they do siestas for 3 hours during the day.
Right.
Oh my God, like you're like suddenly like, wait a minute, there's not a monocultural hegemony over how to live a beautiful life that you love and had on so many subjects, right?
Right.
So how do
people who are like have been only exposed to that go culture, you know, like here in the US or an A type of entrepreneur, you know, how do they go about, or I'm going to say we because I'm in that too, to learn how to savor and appreciate life more? Like, how do we get better at that?
Well, first look at your agenda and see how you're making decisions about how you spend your time. Do you cut off your work at a certain hour and it's like, I'm done at 4 o'clock or whatever it is, like I'm done. And maybe you still look at your phone a little bit, but like really like the work is done, or really you let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing is really, I don't know if you like to cook and or if you like to eat. Cooking, of course, I think is one of the most beautiful vehicles of sensuality and sensory connection to life and the world. It's an unbelievable meditation. You cannot hold a sharp knife and it's still be in your head. It's not going to happen, right? You know, and if you don't want to burn something and you try and do complicated things as you do more, like you need to be super present, right?
Because
you're going to burn this, overcook this, you know, and then you want the artistic element. Like instead of just putting the food on the table, make it like you're in the Chateau of Versailles, right? Like it's a celebration, like, oh, this is a romantic Valentine's Day dinner. But every bloody night, use gorgeous fabric napkins. Use like when you travel, bring your own like serious silverware, like your grandmother's, you know, like silverware. Yeah. You know, so you make like a celebration as if you were in some grand hotel. You know, I'm kind of caricaturizing, but if you start to honor and value and give meaning to that moment, that's certainly already one way to do it and make it beautiful. You know, learn and study about plating. So instead of just putting stuff on the table, plate it. put that little touch of a flower or a parsley stem or something like you see on Instagram,
right?
And it changes everything. And then you feel special. You feel like you're giving something special. The people that at the table, you're like, oh, wow, like, wait, nobody does this. I must be special. Like, they must love me. They must want to care for me. They want to give me this gift. And I mean, there's like so much right there already, right?
Right.
And just like, you know, feel into it. Like, what if this was a romantic moment? Because when we're in a romantic moment, we want to be artistic. So we write a little poem on a little piece of paper that we put on the plate of the person we're dining with, or the six people who have come over for dinner. You know, and then we start to integrate other elements that make it like a more fun and entertaining evening. And if you can lean into art, the arts and culture are magnificent ways also to expand our sense of getting away from a rational world into a more feeling, emotional world. You know, the embodiment of dancing, the feeling of singing and the vibrations of that, experiencing and singing along. We know this when we go to concerts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it. And then start to have more interesting conversations at the table that are not around work. Talk about the movie that you just saw. And I'm trying to get people, like, you know, when you talk about food or wine or something you're tasting, say three things. So don't just say, I love it. Well, okay, why do you love it?
Right.
I love it because it's got a velvety feel on my tongue, and it's kind of poking at my tongue. It's like bubbling on my tongue a little bit. And it kind of reminds me of cherries, right? And it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. Mm-hmm. It's like the fact that you're actually using your attention to focus on what you're experiencing and you're externalizing it, that expression is suddenly helping you validate and anchor in and build the encyclopedia of your senses. And suddenly your palate starts to get better. And the way that you speak about it gets better, mm-hmm. right?
I gotta say, you've truly blown my mind, because you're talking and I'm thinking, because one of the things our business does, we're a wellness lifestyle company, and when people hear wellness, well, people in the United States hear wellness, they want to automatically put us in a health and fitness box. Like, oh, to be healthy, I have to be fit. I have to go to the gym. I have to eat differently. But what you just said, what you described is, you know, people who are burnt out and they're like, oh my God, I can't wait for my next vacation. And it's like, why are you waiting to your next vacation? You can literally have these experiences without leaving your home, or you could have these experiences every day of the week if you choose to, and not have to go anywhere. And that's going to be a tremendous leveling up to your health and wellness within that, your own private, intimate scenario situation right there.
And I want to throw like yeah. something in here, because I'm really curious how you handle like what Jay said, right? Because Jay is Zen. Jay is the Zen master in our relationship. I'm the recovering A-type entrepreneur, right? And so as you're talking through all these things, I step back into like my previous self, where you would have told me these things and I would have been like, yeah, that sounds great. I really want that. But when it would come down to choosing, do I slow down and savor the food? Do I slow down and do this? I would have chose, like you said, like to find my purpose in the work. And so how do we really like, you know, take what Jay's saying and what we believe in, like, how do we take all that and help somebody who's in so much of that? Like, I could just, as you were saying it, I could go back to my old self and be like, that sounds great, but I'm busy. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you really yeah. make that leap to feel like you have the purpose and the pleasure together?
This is why I use pleasure as the doorway.
Yeah.
Because a busy person still likes eating pleasure. Really great food.
Right,
yeah,
right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I love that.
They like having fascinating conversations. They like mm-hmm. to be entertained. So as you start to integrate that more into your daily life, you're getting more of that. The problem is people don't. And eating is transactional. And so they go from being super busy to actually treating and delegating their food experience more than I think they should to restaurants and stuff. So what do? There's no break in their day. Mm-hmm. So like, you're just going at it. Even when you go to dinner, you're going right. at it, because right. you're not coming to your senses and you're not even present. Really, you're a little present, mm-hmm. you know, you're enjoying, you're savoring, etc. But I'm saying, you know, if you're a high performing in your work life and your personal life and your experience in life, you know, is not ramping up, this is going to catch up to you one day. Yeah. And you're going to realize you've been missing life. You're going to realize also that potentially you've lost something in your life. You know, and I'm not talking about your work. But
right.
You've lost something in your life. It could be a relationship. It could be your connection with yourself. You suddenly wake up and you're like, I've been killing it so much. Like, who am I?
Right.
You know, and at the end of the day, really, are you loving your life? Are you loving it because you're following what, you know, you thought was the path to living a successful life, which for a lot is successful work equals successful life. So I think that you can't force someone to come to that conscious awakening.
Right.
This said, if someone doesn't feel like they're getting enough pleasure in their life and yet they're killing it at work and yet it's never enough, and even when it is, it's not enough. And they're kind of stuck on this hamster wheel. So, you know, if they want to live their life like that, you know, I think that's okay. But think about the people around you in your life. Like, are you giving them the life that they want with your presence and your attention and sharing beautiful, sensuous, pleasurable moments? Like, attentiveness and presence and awareness and all these things, it's like the main thing that makes life worth living, because that's the only doorway to be able to actually be with it. So if you're only doing that in your work relationship, and even there I would question that if you're so kind of narrow focused, to my heart and to my mind, you're not really living a fully expressed and experienced life. You're living life through like a black and white lens when there's all this other color here. And think about the way you're raising your children.
Right.
Think about the impact you're having on the people that work for you, and it's performance for performance in its extreme case. And, you know, everyone's got to decide for themselves if that's the life they want to lead. But if you have the least bit of inkling that maybe there's something different, there's a different way of experiencing it, maybe I can actually even be more effective and sustainable in my work if I start integrating these other aspects, maybe my well-being will be better. I mean, I worked in a very, you know, top performing entertainment companies, Disney and IMAX. And I can tell you, I would fight like crazy to go on holiday. I can tell you that, I mean, I worked almost every weekend collecting box office, and there was all kinds of things. But, you know, never missed an opportunity to, you know, use my senses to come back and have a beautiful moment, and not just with work people,
right,
in my own life. And, you know, to build your own life. And you're not even, let's even talk about like money. Like, some people are like crushing it money wise, but like at the end of the day, what's left in their bank account? What have they invested in? Where's, are they really building, or are they just kind of like spending so much to satiate and to, you know, kind of feel like to work so hard, they should be able to, you know, be paid to be able to do whatever they want. And great, everyone needs to experience that. But I think that's a little bit of actually the short-term thinking. And at the end of the day, are you really enjoying your life and not burning out, not getting sick right before you go on holiday? I mean, is that the most ridiculous thing ever? Holidays are for going to climbing the Himalayas and swimming with the dolphins, and, you know, going and building schools in some exotic country, going and having a yoga retreat. You know, I have this friend of mine who's a lawyer, of all things, who went to go on holiday for 2 weeks. Like a year ago. He posts on Facebook, he's going on holiday first time. It's because his partners are like, you have to go on holiday because you're gonna, you know, you're gonna, something's gonna snap. You know, you have a stroke, or you can have some kind of problem. And he's like, So he goes. And he goes for 2 weeks apparently to some standard resort in like Mexico somewhere. And he sits by a pool and reads some novel or something. And after a week, he comes back and he posts on, you know, he comes back a week early.
Wow.
He posts on Facebook, you know, worst idea ever. I will never, ever do that again. And I'm like, if this person hasn't completely misunderstood what life is about from my perspective, what free time is, don't call it vacation.
Right.
Free time. Here's 2 weeks. Do anything on the planet. Go anywhere. Learn something. Like, do a purposeful thing if you want, but so caught up in that, so addicted in that, that he's under-exercised his freedom muscles.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like people who retire and like they die very shortly afterwards.
Right.
Right? Like they look at men, like the age of men after they retire.
Right.
But why? Because they've so identified and so given to that. And I think this is where we get a little bit kind of caught up in that is, you know, we just get so, you know, caught up in that. And I mean, surround yourself by people who don't do so much of that, you know, make commitments that like you have to show up for just to break the pattern. Because that kind of addiction, I think, is of an older period. And today we have way more agency and leveraging and choice and options, I feel. And you can integrate, like Jay, you said, I'm for what you said. Every single day is a way to do it. You don't need to go traveling some exotic place. Every single day you can make your life a pleasurable, sensorial release and feast and experience. But if you don't value that, if you don't start giving that value, if you don't give it meaning, if you don't make it purposeful, right? Make it purposeful.
Right.
There's so many ways to experience that. And I'm telling you, your relationships get way better and your decisions get better. You're not just, you know, making work decisions. You're making like really good personal life decisions and for your children and your relationship. And like suddenly like you're not going to that crappy restaurant anymore because your palate is better.
Yeah.
You know, and you're so present now that you're like, no, I'm not, what am I eating? No, I don't want that. I want this.
Right.
Yeah.
Like suddenly like the world starts to open up to you. It's like this thing suddenly goes like this and you're not afraid of it anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And you start daring and
Right. Now I would love to go to the direction of this romance, right? Because I know, you know, you're in Paris, the land of romance. You wrote a book about romance, and even you lost your romantic love of 27 years. So, I mean, romance has been a big part of your life. And I think everything we've talked about, I really wonder how many Americans, and I can only assume because I'm an American and live here, right? How many Americans really don't experience romance or maybe even know what it is? So I gave you a couple different ways you could go with that question, but I want to go down the romance path a little bit.
Well, maybe you saw the film that really I created with 33 people who I asked them the question, is romance essential in your life? Did you guys see this?
Didn't see it, no.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, so is romance essential in your life? And if so, why, right? Mm-hmm. And so 33 people gave me video responses, and it's half men, half women. And there's, you know, an 11-year-old, there's a 77-year-old. And it's an absolutely fascinating video because the definition of romance is seemingly quite different for everybody. Very few of them actually took the very strict, you know, it's chocolates and flowers and going to dinner on Valentine's Day, right? There's so many other ways of living romance in your everyday life that's about making other people feel seen and desired and noticed and heard, right? And, you know, touched, and that you actually have this kind of romantic way of looking at life that you want to make the moments like dinners at home. You want to make it a little bit more jazzy. You'd light some candles tonight. You don't need the like official celebration.
Right.
And for God's sake, don't go buy a card that's already been written. Write your own card. Write your own poem and then recite it at the table. You know, I once for Valentine's Day, I learned secretly to play the harmonica.
Wow.
So I learned a song for my spouse, who, of course, first thing she says to me after I played, she was crying, everything. She's like, where did you find the time to do this? You know, and like, you never forget that.
Right.
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 So it's like, how can you make moments of life unforgettable? And the key really to romance is that in the beginning, romance is really easy. The honeymoon phase, everything is new. It's a first time you're doing things together. And yet it's really the seeding of noticing what the other really loves and enjoys and savors, right? And together, what do you really enjoy,
right?
Right? Because there's things that maybe one of you will love and the other doesn't so much. Mm-hmm. And romance can be about you going to something you're not so happy about, but you go there with as full a heart as you possibly can for the other person. Like you go to that family lunch, you know, that you just can't stand the uncle, you know, you want to, you know, just tell him to F off. But you go and you take it, you prepare yourself and you take a third degree and you say that this contrast and this giving, this is real loving. Right. This is real romance. And just to continue to find ways to bring a certain sense of novelty is obviously probably the easiest way to keep things there. And I just want to say that's like when we get so caught up in our work and all these other things, we come home, we have very little energy left. And then that's when we start to have conversations and we're in a really bad space because we're so caught up in, you know, it's like the worst time to make decisions about life or to have a discussion about, right. Like you didn't empty the dishwasher yesterday. Yeah, you're like the chosen moment is not so ideal. So I find it actually quite beautiful in very loving, delicious moments to start to have intimate conversations and to come, you're in such a beautiful place and to just kind of, you know, together, like agree to speak about some of those kinds of things. You know, you got to really fight to, and I'm not a fighter, I'm really a lover, but you know, in a metaphoric sense, you got to really fight to keep your couple, your relationship as something that remains on a pedestal. And I mean that in the most positive sense.
Right.
I'm surprised. I don't have my own children, but I'm always been quite surprised by people that don't put their couple as the core of their life. Because that's where the energy comes from. That's where you can waste a lot of emotional energy. That's where you can, like, when that should be like the core of the sun, right? Like when that is humming along, you know, this happy wife, happy life, you know, the husband feeling that he's present and, you know, can offer solutions when that's something that makes sense. And like, there's this dance that's going on, and that your attention to honoring that and making that beautiful is such a great thing. And it takes two to tango. Sometimes there's one more than the other. And this is the great thing. I'm like pulling you back in. You're heading off and, you know, I don't know, you're drinking too much and I'm sort of helping you come back. And, you know, you start smoking, we turn it, you know, and then, you know, you're getting a little bit away, you know, or your finances are a little bit, you're having trouble at work. And like, so it's like this constant, like give and take thing. But obviously it cannot be a one directional thing.
Yeah.
One cannot turn off and then expect that, you know, the vibrancy of this world that you've created is going to emanate to everything else. And when that is good and the trust is there, like magic is possible.
Yeah.
You know? And then you can go off and do things on yourself and do things with friends and stuff. But like, you can't spend your whole weekend playing golf away from your spouse who hates golf.
Right.
I'm sorry. How does that make any sense?
That makes no sense at all. My opinion.
The golfers hate me. Anyone who plays golf hates me now.
they'll be fine. They'll be fine. They understand. One of my biggest things is, you know, with people who get married, you know, they get caught up in the daydream. You know, the wedding, the ring, the person you quote unquote fell in love with. You know, and then it's like, vow, if you do the traditional vows or whatever, you know, it's for better or for worse. That doesn't mean once you're, you know, when you're glammed up and when you're not glammed up, it's like, we have decided to do this together, no matter rain or shine. I think a lot of people just want to look for the sunshine moments, the rainbow moments, and I don't want to say forget, but they kind of neglect those days when it's storming. You know, you kind of, like you said, the other person is drinking too much and you have to bring them back, you know, or vice versa, whatever it is. And you are the one who has to be pulled back. Like, I feel those are the times that kind of reinforces the bond of the relationship. You know, those times for me is when you can look at that person and say, yes, this is why I wanted you to be my spouse or significant other or partner, is because when I was at my lowest, I knew you could pick me up and vice versa. I want to do the same for you, instead of like, oh, you're not the person I thought you were. No, we're people. People change. People change. And if you're basing all that on a day where everything was fucking perfect, and you think that's going to be like that for the rest of your marriage, you're disillusioned.
I mean, people should really spend less money on their weddings and, you know, spread that money out for their 5th, 10th, 20th anniversary, like locked in a bank somewhere. Like there's the incentive.
A high yielding interest account.
A Vanguard endeavor.
Right.
Anything or something like this. Interestingly, my marriage was basically a green card marriage because we were in love and living together, but my visa was kind of just kept running out. And so we just kind of decided that way, but we trusted each other and it was really risky. I mean, my spouse was 19 years older than I was.
Wow.
So, you know, everyone looked at us like we were absolutely crazy, but we knew. Or we didn't know, but we trusted each other and, you know, started to build a life together from there. And I mean, I literally told my parents not to come to the wedding. Mm. I'm like, don't come. It's not a wedding. Can you believe this? So we basically had a wedding here in our home here, which was the best party ever.
Yeah.
But there was no like, you know, so-called honeymoon, so-called whatever. I never wore a ring in 30 years. My spouse wore her grandmother's ring. You know, the party, we got a lot of free food from her sister who was working with the restaurant world here in Paris. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, there wasn't this whole like buy the dress, this sort of like overblown. And do weddings like this. Everyone needs to decide what their sort of,
right.
You know, their preferences. But like you said, Jay, if suddenly that becomes some kind of like ludicrous reference of what it is, that's kind of problematic. Because I think, you know, real love is in these little moments where like, I'm putting the cream on your burnt shoulders, right? I'm like,
right.
And because I noticed and you didn't, I'm still looking at you. I'm still watching your back. And, you know, also just preserving energy to come and be together.
Right.
Like again, you can't waste all your energy. You guys are sharing this with so many people and guiding people. Like you can't give away so much of that energy to stuff that doesn't nourish what you want to sustain in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really a decision though. You know, it's like, it's not just a signature on a piece of paper. It's not just a ceremony. I mean, we know that more than half the time that doesn't work out. And scandalously, probably the figures within the first 3, 5, 7 years are really complicated. This said, this doesn't exonerate people from stepping up and, you know, not just blaming the other for not, you know, taking time to heal and grow as a human being. And it's like in lovemaking or like sex, let's say consent is something that you need to ask for again and again and again. It's not like you don't just ask for consent once,
right?
You know, in that kind of those kind of relationship, and then you just assume that you have it for the rest of your life, even in married couples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like the respect that's there, and also like I always said to my wife, our measure of our well-being is both of us together. So we add both of our well-being together, and that average is what interests me. That's what we're aiming for. So it's not just about me and not you. It's not just about you and not me. We have to help each other to get to the highest shared, you know, ratio.
Right.
And so that's not so easy sometimes when there's health problems, addictions, unforeseen illnesses and immune system things. I mean, there's so many things that happen around us, you know, that are very difficult to handle. But when the love is there and you keep coming back to it because you've chosen to make every day the day, so you make a beautiful meal together, you know, you stop complaining about it takes so much time to prepare. That's all part of the ceremony.
Right.
You know, it's like this is the, like people say like cooking is a chore. I'm like, well, I don't see it at all that way.
Right.
Cooking is an effort. Cooking takes some time, though you can get way more strategic about that and it doesn't take so much time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's so strategic about certain parts of life and the rest are like even getting strategic about romance. I said to you, come on, liking your job there where you're making money.
Right.
What if you took that strategic mind, like you're not getting paid this month until you, you know, let's go for the strategic plan about how do you do build romance into your life?
Oh, I love that.
So it's like, how do you just use what you love to do in the work world and just bring a bit more of it into your personal life and keep the romance?
Awesome what you just said. And it's like, we've been in a lot of conversations with people, and you know, this conversation, this thing of work-life balance comes up, always comes up. And I'm not a big, I don't agree with balance. It's always counterbalance. And what you just said was more like work-life integration, because there's always going to be a give and get, you know, a push and pull. But if you learn how to integrate the things that you're great in and work and bring it to your relationships, to your lifestyle, and vice versa, the things that you're good in and your lifestyle, and bring that to the work, your workplace or your environment, I think that that really starts to solidify the work-life integration. You don't have to worry about balancing this, balancing that, because you're never going to be completely balanced. There's always a shift and a counter shift, and okay, I got to go over here, now I got to come over here, I got to go over here. But it's like the integrating of everything and learning how to make it work together seamlessly.
It's very, so very articulately expressed, Jay. And that's really what it is. And when I talk about pleasure with purpose is performance, it's exactly that. To make purposeful things more pleasurable and to make pleasurable things more purposeful. You know, I mean, there's this great example, which you probably heard about they did like a study about cleaning people, where they had two different groups, and I'm gonna march all over this study, and it's gonna be, you know, go fact check this, but the story is, you know, the moral of the story is solid. So like, cleaning people were in two different groups, were told, one of them was told, for the next 5 weeks, when you're cleaning, we just wanted to let you know that cleaning is like going to the gym. Mm-hmm. It's like a workout, right?
Yeah.
And the other ones, they told nothing. And so what happens, of course, the people who had spent the 5 weeks with this purpose and intention got in better shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when we take cooking as a chore, of course it's not, you know, if cooking is the most grandiose, deep spiritual exercise that you can do because it brings you back to exactly what Vipassana meditation does, going through sensations and using your focus and awareness, and then actually savoring it and appreciating it and being in mindfulness, it's all there, like in regular life. Mm-hmm. And so when we fall into the cliches that it's a chore, it's like washing the dishes, someone's washing, someone's drying, and you're having an intimate conversation, doing something manual is so valuable. If you're just there saying, let's put it in the dishwasher, and then again, we can get on to going back to something in our head, or like there's too much delegation, right? Mm-hmm. I have a Ferrari kitchen. I'm telling you, one day when you come for dinner here, you know, my kitchen is insane. I don't have a washing machine in my kitchen.
Right.
Okay. So, but anyway, it's just like that overlapping. And I'll just add one more thing. One of the things that I do sometimes when I'm doing chores around the house and I'm alone, potentially, I have a picture that I took when I was at the Taj Mahal. Okay. The Taj Mahal in India is this exceptional, very romantic structure that you feel. I mean, when you're there, the story behind it is horribly, crazily hard to accept, but it's very powerful because the emperor, whatever he was called, he lost his wife. And so he hired an architect and said, I want to build a structure that will honor her. Mm-hmm. And he said, so that you will feel what I feel and you will build something that will remind me of this and honor this, I'm killing your wife.
Wow.
Whoa. Okay. And so he built this unbelievably sensuous structure that's just mind-blowing. So when you're there, there's a fountain that leads up to it. And there were all these men that were working brimming in the fountain, just keeping it clean. And I have them in front of the Taj Mahal. And I say, if I can see any chore I do in life, like I'm contributing and I'm working in this palace at one of the most beautiful places on the planet, you know, I'll get into an abundance mindset and I will find purpose in it. and I'll be like these cleaning people that it's a workout. And, you know, when I start to take the stairs instead of the escalators and I start to breathe as if I'm exercising, suddenly I'm getting this like enjoyable thing. And suddenly life is like this endless, you know, adventure of how can I build the pleasure and do it and make it purposeful, right? And then we don't just get caught in, I'm not saying pleasure for pleasure's sake is a bad thing. You don't want to live there though, right? Mm-hmm. This is people who are on drugs all the time, right?
Right.
Or, you know, whatever. And you don't want to be the purpose for purpose or a performance for a performance. I feel, you know, life is meant to be joyful and enjoyed.
Yes. Yes.
There's something juicy about it. You want to not go crazy in the excess. And I just love the word. The word you said, Jay, I'm all into that. I'm all really about that. My quest, and I hope that all of our quests is about integration. Mm-hmm. Integration is everything. We're in such a, you know, masculine, feminine energy world, mm-hmm. black and white, yes and no, on and off light switch. And I'm like, no, there's a variator button that I want
right.
for the right. color. Like I want the volume button and the tone right. and the right. pitch. And I like, right. Not,
I
let's
tweak
not,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to tweak it in my way. And I want to have different kinds of experiences. And I don't want to be so caught into it's either you have it or not. There's so much nuance. I mean, it's a very kind of tantric way of looking at the world, right?
Right.
And this is, for me, this is, you know, sensuous sensuality and love and loving. And it really goes into the domain of feelings and emotions also, right? So we mm-hmm. start to allow ourselves to say, maybe I can feel this and it's not happiness, but it's something that's part of me and I want to integrate it. And if I allow myself to experience it and sense it, I don't immediately go into some habitual pattern or something. Mm-hmm. You know, this integration is just so everything. Like, yeah. this is what we want.
Right.
I mean, this has been such like a powerful conversation. I'm excited because I have food here in front of me. I have avocado toast. Jay has a cup of fruit. And I am going to totally approach this avocado toast differently than I would have if I would have scarfed it down the couple of minutes before the call.
You know, I can't wait to hear about this.
I know, I'm excited to try this out. And, you know, I'd really love for you to share a little bit more about, you know, where to find your book, you know, who would be a good person to tap into the Dance of the Love Caterpillars and read that fictional story about romance. And, you know, if someone wants to learn from you and learn about how to be more sensual, how can they?
Yeah, thank you, Jenny and Jay. You can reach me, obviously, on Facebook as David Brower, B-R-O-W-E-R. I'm quite active there, quite active on Instagram. And the handle there is @thesensorialguy. And, of course, my website, which is davidbrower.com. For Dance and Love Caterpillars, my name, I'm using David Charles Brower. But you can find Dance and Love Caterpillars online. In the States, you can even find it on bookshop.org, which I really like because that's supporting local bookstores. And there's also a really delicious, sensuous, beautiful audio version of the book. It's on Audible and on Amazon.
Okay.
You can go listen to a sample of it. It has an original, it's me doing the narration. That's not the beautiful part. I mean, it's part of it, but it's really because of the integration. I'm using Jay's work, the marriage, of the audio original musical soundtrack by Viara Ivanova Dietrich.
Oh, wow.
That's just super exquisite. So it's a 12, 15-minute original piece of music.
Wow.
That's accompanied there. And if you go up there, you can find it. Now, who could read this book and get something out of it? I mean, we're about 70 reviews. You can go up and read quite a bit. Everyone's kind of getting different things about it. But, you know, my story is really about having lost a loved one and desiring to remind myself that in life we begin again and again and again. And this is how we demonstrate that we love life. We trust it again. And as we start to trust it, start to really overall savor it. Mm-hmm. You know, that life is full of all these contrasts and the best way of demonstrating that we know that and we live that is to, on our own pace, is to get over our losses, our griefs, our challenges, and to start again and just savor life, enjoy life, and maybe live something new and different and just begin again, just like in meditation, right? your thoughts take over and you just say to yourself, you know, start again, come back. And this book is a message of that, really, and that we can be metamorphosized, but really what matters is until then, because we don't know, in the unknown, in the uncertainty, savor life in the ways we've spoken about, integrate all these beautiful things.
I feel so at peace. I feel even as if our chat here today was a little bit of a meditation itself. You know, I feel really good. I feel really excited. I feel really inspired. So I want to thank you for bringing your energy into this. Jay, you want to add anything before we close up?
It's been an awesome combo.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you for coming on. You guys reach out to him. This is a great compliment to the Unfuckwithable series because it provides a totally different perspective of how you can approach life. And the final question I want to ask, David, is what is your favorite quote and how does it speak to your journey?
I'm horrible at remembering quotes. My favorite quote, because it does evolve and change. There's a quote that comes from the movie Alice in Wonderland. I think it's the Mad Hatter who says it, unless it's Alice. Or maybe Alice, I don't know, either one, but it's something along the lines of, you know, you're totally insane, you know, you're totally crazy, but the best people are.
Mad Hatter. Yeah,
Alice is it the Mad totally Hatter said it?
Yeah.
Did I Alice butcher that or what?
No, you had it. Because Alice said, you're mad, or you're crazy, you're insane. And he said, oh, but my dear, the best people are.
That's good for me right now.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, David. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You can subscribe to the Holistic Life Podcast from your favorite streaming platform. And don't forget to check out 2jholla.com to stay in the know as an official 2JH Insider. Mahalo for tuning in.